accession number 27347, Reel 6.
Stanley Brand, Reel 6.
We were learning all the time from the old hands, who were only too ready to show their knowledge of the Navy to impress us. But we learned how to get some of the blue dye out of our collars, so that instead of really dark navy blue collars, which showed you how new you were, you could get a nice pale blue, which looked as though it had been bleached by Mediterranean sun. You put a slit in the front piece where the tapes were, and put it onto a cold water tap and tied the tapes and just left the tap running, and it used to take the dark blue out and leave it nice pale sky blue, time served, long term matlow. They taught us all the dodges, some of which I knew already, how to get a shine on your boot by heating a spoon in a candle and rubbing the hot spoon on the wet surface of your boot to get a high polish. I learned this in the Home Guard, of course, from the First World War hands. I'm trying to think of any other dodges that we learn. Oh yes, we learned how to put our cap bands on our caps for quick demounting, because we were officer cadets, so we had a white band on our sailor's cap. This of course marked you out as an object of ridicule amongst pucker naval types, so we were taught how to whip the white band off and put an HMS, or better still, a Fleet Air Arm cap band on. A Fleet Air Arm cap band was never recognised, but they could be bought in the junk shops in Portsmouth, who catered for the new recruits. So instead of an HMS band, you could get one marked Fleet Air Arm, and that was the ideal, of course. The white band was difficult to keep clean, because whenever you had to do an off caps, in other words, for religious service or to collect your pay, the guarantee was that your hands were dirty from one thing or another, and you had black finger marks on the white band on your cap, which of course led to recriminations always. So we were glad to pretend that we belonged to the Pucker Navy at that stage.
What about facilities for you there? Was there a canteen area?
Yes, there was a canteen area run by the NAFI. And if I remember, a cup of tea was a penny and a rock bun. Oh, and were there rocks? Gibraltar had nothing in it. Rock cakes with the few currants always on the outside and burned. The other thing I remember about the NAFI is the spoon at the point where your mug of tea was issued. There was a spoon which was chained to the counter. But very pleasant ladies behind the counter, all of them very motherly. They all had to be motherly, because young ones wouldn't have wouldn't have survived the advances of the motley crowd that we were.
You said after 3 days you were given command of the squad, were you?
Yes, yes.
How did that come about?
It's just that every day they changed it, and it was a case of you or you. We were there for 14 days, and the squad was about 25 people, so it was just the luck of the draw.
And how did you take to that then?
Fair enough, because I'd been doing it in the Home Guard. The only thing is that we were forming threes instead of forming fours, and it's a very different operation. When you're in a double line and you have to form threes, it's a very different operation to being in a double line forming fours. Forming threes, you took a pace backwards and a step aside, whereas I forget how I did it now. It doesn't matter, because forming fours soon disappeared. I don't know why forming fours was so popular at the beginning of the war and why it changed to forming threes. It was probably something to do with the width of roads in France. I don't know.
So what would your daily routine be there then? Would you be walking at 6 every morning by the...
Yes, the 6 and at 6:30 go on to parade. At 7 o'clock breakfast for half an hour. And then I forget.
Would you do any physical exercises while you were there?
Yes. I remember one day having a lot of PT and a cross-country run. It must have been a case of not having a lecture organised and keep them busy by sending them on a run.
So, as you said before, the mornings were divided between either lectures or drill?
Yes.
What time would you have a lunch?
It'd be 12 o'clock. 12 till 6:30. And here we were introduced to the naval system of messing, where you were allocated in messes of 12, and one man in each mess had to collect the food for the 12, and had for that day had to be responsible for returning the dishes suitably cleaned at the end of the meal. Once again, we were quick to learn the naval system was a good one. It was one that worked even in an open boat amongst survivors. The man who divided out the food was the last one to take a portion, on the principle that if any portions were bigger than others, they would always go first, and he'd be left with the smallest, and serve him right. He should have seen that they were all equal. He was also responsible for seeing the mess kits were cleaned. This is a terrible job, because they had a tub of lukewarm water on which a layer of grease was floating, and the knives and forks of everybody had to be washed in this, cups, saucers, plates, and the mess tins as well. At Leon Solent, the galley was reasonably clean as far as I know. I was never in it early in the morning or late at night. But I never met a naval galley that was not overrun with cockroaches. More of that later when I'm at HMS St. Vincent. But I didn't see any at Leon Solent. But it was impossible to wash those tins in which corned beef hash had been baked and it was burned onto the sides. You couldn't soak it. You just had to scrape it with a knife. We each took our turn at this business of being mess man.
What type of things did you get for lunch?
Oh, stew in particular. Macaroni cheese was another one. I seem to remember getting that two or three times in the fortnight we were there. The reason I remember it is that the macaroni hadn't been soaked long enough, and it was, as they say now, al dente. It was hard to the teeth. We got Cornish pasties, we got sausages, beans, I remember getting Spam and thinking how wonderful that was.
Were you given a dessert?
In the evening we were, yes. Usually a steamed suet pudding, which we... It came in a roll about 18 inches long and about 4 inches diameter. And we reckoned that it had been formed in a sock, usually a used sock. Yes, I remember one which was figs, dried figs in the fruit. Sultana was another one. Currants was another one. These were the variations on the duff. All much of a muchness with a custard deficient in milk and sugar, made from custard powder with lukewarm water. It helped disguise the colour of the duff, which was generally grey, because flour in those days wasn't white flour. It was, we reckoned that it was the sweepings from the granary floor, which had everything in it, including the cigarette ends and the cat's droppings and the mouse droppings and so on. It was a horrible grey concoction. But we were hungry and we were 18. And with no other chance of food, because we weren't allowed to go ashore, although it was a land base, they called it going ashore, until we'd been, all of us, kitted out, drilled to a presentable standard, and knowing who to salute and who not to salute and how to salute. Then we were allowed ashore. We were only allowed ashore by boat. You had to fall in at the gates, and at various timed intervals you're allowed to march out through the gate, which was called going ashore. And you had to be inspected by a chief petty officer. Anybody not properly dressed was turned back and faced a penalty of doubling round the quarter deck for so many hours. Yes, we weren't allowed ashore. I think it was about after the first week we managed to get ashore. After we'd seen the film about venereal disease, of course.
You mentioned there you weren't allowed out until you knew who to salute. Yeah. How did you learn the various ranks in the Navy? Was that a lecture or did you have some printed material?
Oh, they had posters all over the place showing different ranks and comparable ranks in the three services. I mean, at that time I knew the comparable rank between a captain in the Navy and a group captain in the RAF and a brigadier in the Army. We learned it from posters. There were posters everywhere. Posters in the canteen, posters in the lecture theatres. If your mind wandered from the lecture because it was, in our opinion, not worth listening to, you could study the posters on the wall.
And you said about your evenings. Obviously, what time did you have your evening meal and what did you do after?
Oh. After the evening meal, we generally had quarters to clean. We had letters to write home. We had sewing to do, because if there was an article of clothing which was slightly too large, you had to take it up, because the naval variations between size A and size B were pretty big, and if you wanted to appear tiddly, which was the naval expression of being a real sailor, you had to go halfway between the two sizes and you'd take it up. We did a lot of sewing. I'd never done any sewing before. I'd never needed to. But I became a dab hand at sewing.
Who showed you what to do in sewing?
Oh, the stripey. Each mission hut had a stripey in charge. He had his own little cubby hole at the end of the mission hut. And he was the man who was judge and jury. He was able to condemn us to jobs that we didn't like. He was able to give us a pat on the back. He was God Almighty, although he hadn't any rank.
Was the accommodation inspected at all?
Oh, yes. Yes, very much so. Generally by a petty officer or a chief petty officer, rather than an officer. I don't remember officers ever coming round. It was always the senior NCOs in the Navy. Perhaps a good thing, because we learned that instant obedience to their wishes was the be-all and end-all of naval life. If you didn't adopt the right attitude towards them, you suffered.
How would that manifest itself then?
By getting all the dirty jobs. If you let it be seen that you didn't like the man, or that you despised the man, that was it. Your life was hell from then on. No, they were little tin gods, and they liked recognition of the fact.
How was their attitude towards you as recruits, because you were potential officer cadets?
Oh, because they wanted to show us that the the naval non-commissioned officers were people of great value. We had to be impressed with that, and we were duly impressed.
Would they be the people who would take you for drill on a large scale?
Yes, yes. The people who were doing the inspections were the ones who'd take us on drill. The only time I saw an officer on the quarter deck was on Sunday morning divisions, where we had a Royal Marine band that played for the marching, that played for the hymns, and made us feel that we were 8 feet tall. Marching to a Royal Marine band is something that every youngster should experience. If I had my way today, any young transgressor would be made to march to a Royal Marines band round and round and round and round a quarter deck till his feet were red hot.
And with Sunday divisions, would that be followed by a religious service at all, or would that be included within the divisions?
It's included in the divisions, yes. For those in peril on the deep, to which was added a verse for those in peril in the air.
Was that specifically for you as what you
Fleet Air Arm, yes, Fleet Air Arm.
Mm-hmm. So you were there at Leon Solent for
a fortnight.
What was the next move?
To HMS St Vincent. HMS St Vincent was in Gosport. It had been it was reputed that it was built for Napoleonic prisoners of war. And all the standards confirmed that. I'm not sure whether it was or not. It had been a boys' training ship. On the quarterdeck there, sorry, quarterdeck being a tarmacked area, there was a mast with all the rigging and spars to train people to go up and... my friend Jack Thomas is one of the few Fleet Air Arm people I know who went right up the top and stood on the ball on the top and had the courage to stand up straight instead of holding on like grim death. I never managed to get more than 6 feet below that point. I hadn't the courage for it. No, HMS St Vincent was a typical naval establishment from the Napoleonic days. The galleys were overrun with cockroaches. When we arrived at St Vincent, they'd had a meal kept for us on a hot plate. It consisted of steak and kidney pie, which had a crust which had lifted with a vent hole in it, and a great big tureen of mashed potatoes. So we went up with our plate, we got a steak and kidney pie and a mash dollop. I went back to my table and heard shouts and a kerfuffle coming from behind me, but I cut mine open and the cockroaches came out from in between the meat and the dome and scurried across the table. And in the course of cutting across the pie, of course I cut across some cockroaches, and the smell is something that will live with me forever. I can smell cockroaches, the presence of cockroaches, at a range of about 100 yards, I think. There was such an outcry. They sent for the duty officer who must have been sick to death of this happening to him. He did condemn the whole batch. I suspect that somebody at St. Vincent was in cahoots with the pig. What did they call it? The salvage of food for pigs. They used to feed pigs with salvage food from all the big establishments. Somebody at Vincent had the biggest volume of pig waste that they could have had anywhere, I think, because that poor duty officer had to arrange for tins of bully beef to be opened up, and we got bully beef instead of the pies. Anything that didn't come straight out of a tin was uneatable there.
Why was there such a problem with the Koch roaches, do you know?
Because there's always somebody on duty in an establishment like that, so there was always somebody having to be fed. The galley was always warm. It had hidey holes under ovens. It had cracks in the masonry. It had floorboards that had shrunk. There were homes for cockroaches everywhere, and the warmth from the galley was an attraction for them. Mind, they didn't believe in warming the living quarters for us. I remember in November having ice on a cup of water that I'd put beside my bunk. It was pretty chilly.
What was your accommodation like at St. Vincent? What was it? Was it different from the one you'd had at Leon Solent's?
Huge three-story buildings, high roofed. I don't know why they were so high roofed, but they were. Double-decker steel bunks everywhere, very close together. The ablutions were just the same as at Leon Solent. Stone troughs, cold water, no hot water. I believe there was supposed to be hot water first thing in the morning, but I think all the fuel had been pinched to feed the pot-bellied stoves in the previous winter. There was never any hot water. Shaving, fortunately, wasn't a problem for me because I was light-skinned and my bristles were tender. Mind, I'd made a lot of cuts with the cutthroat razor that Dad had bequeathed to me. It's the one he'd had in the First World War. But eventually I got some safety razor blades and was shown by one of these old hands how to resharpen it once it was blunt. You've got a tumbler and put water in it. You put the blade in and you put your finger on the blade and pressed it down into the shape of the glass, and you rocked it from side to side and the blade rubbed against the glass and it was polished into a sharp edge again. Then you turned it over and did the same again.